Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain!
Not here.
Captain! Report. Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Those are Klingons.
Welcome to the Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I am Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Good evening, Ben.
Is it evening where you are?
I thought I'd be a little formal with you.
Oh, that's sweet. This is the first thing we're recording in the aftermath of our two live shows in Texas.
Right.
I don't have a great sense of how much fans of The Greatest Discovery, it's not a total circle with fans of The Greatest Generation, right? It's a bit of a Venn diagram.
In what way do you mean circle?
Like time is a flat circle?
Sure. The more I meet and interact with the viewers of our programming, the less confident I am that I have a picture of them at all. Like they continue to surprise and delight.
They confound every expectation. And I mean, all that is to say, I don't know if people that listen to The Greatest Discovery would necessarily think of us as a tourable act, but we have been touring with our new live show, Greatest Gen Con. And we are going to be touring it for like 7 months.
Right.
Chances are decent that we're going to be coming fairly close to you if you live in the U.S. or Canada. So go to greatestgencon.com if you want to see about getting tickets to a show. We had so much fun in Austin and Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, we really did. So much so that I can't wait to get back out and keep doing shows, which is not a feeling I've had after doing shows before or doing tours before. I think a big part of it may just be getting used to the idea of doing the show live. I think it may be the sort of thing that that it takes reps to feel great about. Like, I know we did great shows for our previous tours.
Yeah.
We were told we did great shows for our previous tours, but like, to feel that way inside is a different thing. So as someone who is not used to feeling good about anything I've done, it's a new feeling for me. It's that good feeling is probably mostly due to your hard work, Ben, and your quality of joke.
I felt great about the show as a collaboration.
One of the things that we did with this tour might act as a nice transition into Star Trek Discovery pre-production, which is we took a lot more time to pre-produce this live show than we have in tours past. And how would you describe how that process worked for you and how that translated into quality of live show?
There was like a kind of a writer's room feeling a couple of times where like you would toss out like a joke premise and we would kind of rally it back and forth until we had something with an arc and with beats and tags and stuff. And that was something that happened organically on stage in previous tours. But it felt cool to like think of a joke,
develop it and then go do it on stage and see that it worked, you know?
It's a totally different kind of satisfaction than the improvisational kind, you know, which is how we do the podcast show. Like, yeah. That's all improvised. We're not pre-producing that at all.
Yeah.
It felt good to craft something together and then present it and have things work in that way.
Right. Yeah, I think all of that goes to say, like, we would be just a great addition to a writer's room or even just good people to blow out of an airlock or, you know, out of the hull of a ship when an explosion happens or, you know, just something like that. You know, if you happen to be producing a television show where that might happen.
If someone has brandished a gore-based weapon and you're looking for someone unimportant to experiment it on, portrayed by someone who is fine being covered in stage blood.
Yeah. Somebody who looks a little bit awkward in their Starfleet uniform, but it doesn't matter because they're not going to be on screen that long anyways.
Yeah, a medium tailored garment, I would say.
Yeah, you had it on the rack. You put a couple of binder clips on the back to tighten it up in a couple of places.
Yeah.
There has been some news about Star Trek Discovery, Adam. Do you want to get into some show meat?
Yeah, let's do that.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
What the hell is going on this ship? The slightest idea.
Part of what we do during the off season of this show is talk about ideas and share predictions of what the show will be. Conversely, what people who actually work on the show do is go to things like conventions and then tease what they're able to say about the upcoming season, or just obliquely talk about other subjects that are tangentially related to the subject at hand, which would be the show.
This kind of takes the form of marketing for the next season or whatever.
Hey, you're listening to The Greatest Discovery. This is Mary Wiseman, Cadet Tilly, and Captain Kelly.
It's got to be so hard to do this, like to do paneling like they do, and to do junkets, and to get asked questions, and to be made to pivot out of most questions. It's got to be really hard because you don't want to be the person that blows it, right? If you say a name on accident, like, there's no cramming that back in the cat basket. Like, it's done.
It seems like the people that work on this show are good people that like each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, like, you see them, like, taking selfies in the back of their 16-pass vans on the way to set. But like any job, like, you don't really pick your coworkers. And if you are, like, imagine if you had just like a regular office job, but then had to go sit in front of 2,000 people, including the press, and like talk about how your office job is going and like never say anything that your boss isn't going to get mad about. That sounds impossible. And you have to do it with people that have not been selected by you. Like, you don't necessarily have any strong reason to trust or, you know, to trust them or to, like, hope that they'll not throw you under the bus, right?
An interview with an HR professional can often feel that way.
They're just going to pressure you to sign up for LinkedIn.
Right.
What would you say you do here?
Did I ever tell you about the time I interviewed for a job directing videos for Bloomberg.com? And I think it was the second round interview. The HR guy spent 20 minutes of a 45-minute phone interview telling me how I should be spending more time connecting with people on LinkedIn.
Oh, no. That is awful.
I'm so fucking glad I didn't work there.
When a company or a brand tells me how I should best utilize my social media presence, like, thanks, actually, I'll take it from here.
So there was this Vulture Fest. They got a great panel together, it sounds like. We're looking at Gretchen J. Berg, one of the showrunners, and then Sonequa Martin-Green, Michelle Yeoh, Mary Chieffo, and the great friend of the show, Mary Wiseman. And they talked about a lot of stuff.
We've done that Toronto to New York trip. That's like That's what they did here.
Yeah.
It's just a quick jaunt.
Yeah, although we stopped in Boston the time we did it together.
Yeah, I would recommend that this group of people stop in Boston also.
Yeah, we might stop in Boston. I mean, I don't want to announce anything I can't announce yet, but...
That's the plan. We're trying. Yeah, what a great gang.
Yeah.
All smiles.
It's interesting to hear them talk about, like, tying up canon. Like, more than anything else that it's been criticized about being, like, outside of established canon. Like, why isn't everything made out of crappy fiberglass and primary colors like TOS if it takes place in the same era? And, like, now... The next season, it'll start to be kind of overlapping in the timeline with TOS. That stuff is hard to reconcile for a certain kind of fan. Like they want each era to look correct, no matter when the television show about it is being made.
The thing that is difficult for me to reconcile is that this is a box that they're writing to, and so. They're not giving themselves room to succeed because this timeline is happening so soon before TOS that what if season 2 is doubly amazing and then 3 and then 4 after that? Like, eventually you're going to run into the end of the timeline and the beginning of TOS, and how interested are they in doing a sidecar story to that in the way that DS9 was a sidecar timeline-wise for TNG. To me, like, the fun of writing a future Star Trek series is the bet that if you're good, you can keep writing and writing and writing. And for some reason, the thing I can't get out of my head is, like, how long is the show going to be? Is this going to be 4 seasons and they're out because that's the finish line, timeline-wise?
I think that TNG was written in a way that kind of gave room for big... stories to be happening alongside it. I'm not as fluent in TOS as I am TNG. I wonder, does anybody care about anything happening not on The Entrepreneur in TOS? But I mean, like, that's going to be something they have to deal with specifically in this series.
Right.
They've got the Pike Enterprise, and there's been some interesting stuff about whether Zachary Quinto could even portray Spock, because it's basically been all but said that Spock is going to be in season 2 in some way. Like, Frakes has sort of implied it. I think Gretchen Berg has sort of implied it. But, like, Quinto is part of the Viacom part of the Star Trek property, and Discovery is part of the CBS part of the Star Trek property, and they're companies that are not on great terms right now.
Yeah, it's too bad that that a contractual argument could be the thing that holds up some really cool casting. Here's the thing, though, like, if yes or no, do you want that to happen?
I have a lot of different feelings about it. I think that Quinto as Spock is one of the great things about the reboot series. Like, I think he is a fabulous actor. I think he inhabits the role really well. He really, like, makes it his own while also honoring what Nimoy did with it. And he's a bankable actor, you know? Like, if I think that they would have a lot of excitement on their hands if it came out that there were going to be some Quinto things in season 2.
Do you think it's unnecessarily confusing to cast Spock as Quinto and cast someone else as that era's Kirk and not Chris Pine, for example, or Simon Pegg or Carl Urban? Like,
yeah.
If you bring back one, I would argue that you bring back none of the other characters at all to muddle the casting of that if you were to do so. Or you're able to cast them all for some reason, but I don't think you could.
I don't think you could for budgetary reasons, probably, most of all. Like, the kinds of paychecks those guys demand are probably pretty out of control.
This is not something that they would do for exposure.
No. The other part of that Viacom CBS stuff is that Nicholas Meyer was apparently working on a trilogy of Khan movies. Did you read this?
I heard that he was working on a trilogy, but I didn't know that they were Khan related. Tell me more about that.
I know not much more than he was working on a trilogy of Khan films that was put on hold indefinitely because of some of this like contractual squabbling.
One of them is just a reality TV show. It's like The Office on SETI Alpha 5. Oh, we got to eat her these fucking bugs. It sucks. Joaquin's the Dwight of that show, right?
There's a Bubba-like character from Forrest Gump that has a totally inexhaustible list of different ways to prepare SETI eels.
God, you want to low and slow the SETI eel, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's some tough... There's a lot of...
That cartilage is going to take a long time to break down.
A lot of cartilage, a lot of collagen. You want it to... You like kind of a tartine texture by the time you're done. So you can go with a smoker, but I would recommend a sous vide.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Bag those bugs. Bag them up.
I like the way you work it, Adam.
Three series, all of them about Khan. Say The Office : Khan was one of them. Are the other two series also about Khan, or are they Khan timeline adjacent? How do you think that would happen? How do you make three series about the same character?
Well, let's see. Here we go. I'm reading from ScreenRant.com. About a year ago, Meyer revealed he was also working on a new Star Trek project separate from Discovery. Didn't offer details, giving rise to rumors that he was working on a limited series about Khan, Noonien Singh. Meyer has now confirmed that the Star Trek project in question is meant for CBS All Access, but has been put on hold until further notice. So I guess the Khan stuff is more rumor than actual confirmed truth.
God, you know, initially I was like, Ricardo Montalban is so larger than life as that role. How do you replace him? But then, like, this is the same show that cast a different Kirk.
Yeah.
So, like, if any show can do it, it's this one.
Yeah, what did you think about the Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness?
This is not anti-Cumberbatch, but I did not like him or his portrayal in the film. I think Benedict Cumberbatch is great in a lot of things, but I think my issue with that film was just not liking the story of that film.
Yeah, the story was bad.
We were condemned as criminals, forced into exile.
I think that Tarantino might have enough pull and might understand Star Trek enough to do something good. But I think that those like second and third reboot movies really just fucking, it really just had a hard time like finding a way to tell a Star Trek story that also had like mass appeal to a broad audience.
I'm canon adjacent fatigued is what I am. Like, get away from it.
Yeah.
And tell new stories is what I would support right now. Like, be brave.
Right. Like, it's almost gotten fetishized in Hollywood how much you have to hew to canon. And because they redesigned the Klingons a little bit in Disco, they got completely fucking barbecued by a lot of the fans. And if we're going to get slightly different Klingons as a call to war for some of the fans, like, we're going to be stuck with reboots of the same shit for the rest of our lives. You know?
Yeah, I don't want to live that way.
I don't either. Speaking of Klingons, one thing we talked about while we were on the road was somebody posted in our Facebook group a Photoshop of the Disco Klingons, but with TNG-era hair photoshopped onto them.
This is really genius stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, the person that posted it, not the person that posted it in our group, but, like, the thing that they had screen grabbed had somebody being a real dick in the captions that I didn't appreciate, but I thought the Photoshop stuff was genius, because it really does show how it's really mainly, like, nose and hair.
Yeah, it's incredible how closely they look like any other Klingons, and it made me think about, like, I hope someday we get an image of Michael Dorn with just the headpiece on but no hair on the sides. Like, yeah. I wonder what he would look like if he just had the brow.
Right.
The brow and forehead piece.
Can somebody get a shot of him in Chips and then, like, use the... Because he had a close-shaved head, right, in that?
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Chips?
Oh, I watch Chips all the time.
Really?
Big fan, yeah.
Never seen an ep.
Oh, it's so much fun.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those Klingons?
You were talking about before the show premiered, we got to see pictures of Klingons, and then everyone torched the show over these strange-looking Klingons.
Right.
And I think I'd like to talk a little bit about the intentionality or not of telegraphing that stuff ahead of a show.
Right.
Because I really wonder if those pictures were jangly keys before the premiere to get people to talk about something that was not talking about show story, which is the one thing you don't want people to talk about, right? Like, do you think that they accepted the criticism for that because it was functional in that way?
Let me add to that bit of theorizing and say, do you think they knew that it was going to be controversial when the Klingons were revealed? So let's get that out of the way before the premiere so that by the time we get the premiere, we're talking about story and not redesigned Klingons.
Yeah, I think that's as likely as anything else. Like, in reading what happened at Vulture Fest and the paneling that happened and a lot of the messaging around it, like, a ton of the messaging is about, you know, doubling down on diversity and female leads and all of the things that we really enjoyed about season one.
Yeah.
Things that we enjoyed about season one adjacent to the story that we liked about season one.
Right.
Which I would argue is even more critical. And I think what I'm attempting to bring up, perhaps a little inarticulately, is that no one wants to talk about story. Instead, we are talking about, you know, doubling down on making Star Trek look diverse. And these are things that I'm proud of the show for doing, but, like, this is not stuff I want to talk about. You know, like, I would much rather have a story nugget here and get at that with my tweezers than have to read shitty comments about how that's not cool or the way Star Trek should be, or to read 100 think pieces about how great this is when it should be great without needing a think piece.
I looked at the article that we read about the Vulture Fest panel, and my takeaway was these are the things that you talk about when you can't talk about story. And, like, some of the stuff we talked about on the last episode led us to believe that, like, the story might not have even been beaten yet. They might not want to commit in public to something that isn't, like, a sure thing yet on the show.
Right.
And we also live in this culture of no spoilers ever, which, I mean, like, in the history of narrative is a pretty new thing that everybody's so radical about it. Like, when Greeks went to plays, they were just seeing actors perform religious stories that they already knew the beginning, middle, and end of. You know, there was never any expectation of being surprised by the outcome of a story. And that's not to say that people who want to be surprised and fresh are wrong. Like, I certainly feel that way. And I don't like seeing a movie after seeing a trailer that has shown me a scene from the last act of the film. Like, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
But also, like, people are so histrionic about it that it probably makes it really tough to wade into talking about what kind of, you know, even themes you might be exploring if you're on a writing staff.
I want to be, like, super clear. My straight white maleness is not in conflict with any of these matters. This is about, like, really looking forward to hearing more about story, and that instead of story, it's anything else. Not that it's specifically about representation. That's not my point, you know? They could panel about anything else that wasn't about story, and I would still be complaining that we're not hearing anything about story. That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I heard you say, and
yeah.
I definitely think that, like, they should be proud of the diverse cast that they've got, and I'm glad that they're committed to, like, not resting on their laurels about that. Like, I think that is a great goal that the show has somebody to identify with no matter what walk of life you come from. And if I had a criticism of season one on that note, it's that while there are a lot of different kinds of people on screen, we don't get to know many of the characters that well. And that's a bigger problem than having a homogenous cast. Like, if you've got all these different types of people, let's meet them. Let's get to know who they are. Like, let's get to know all those people on the bridge whose names I can't even remember because they don't have enough character yet.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a great way to put it. And you look at a show like The Wire, so many characters from so many backgrounds, and yet they were really well drawn in a right. single season.
It's possible. Let's just get David Simon in there, you know? He can write for anybody.
Where's Wallace, Captain Lorca? Where's Wallace? A friend of the podcast, Bill Tilly, posted a picture of Star Trek Nemesis featuring Tom Hardy in his Picard makeup, and it was shocking how much he looked like Jason Isaacs.
Whoa.
From that angle, it made me think about how much fun it would be to continue that Picard role should Patrick Stewart be reluctant to continue with an actor of Jason Isaacs' caliber.
Right. Like, if Tom Hardy looks like Jason Isaacs, then by the transitive property, Jason Isaacs looks like Sir Patrick Stewart.
The transitive property of Stewart is what you're describing.
Yeah.
It's like a real beautiful mind thing. I'm seeing like the I'm seeing the thing on the whiteboard right now.
Cascading lights in the middle of the room.
That's three of the galaxy brain things right there, right?
Yeah. Whoa. Well, Adam, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
Yeah, let's do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, this Priority One message comes from Amanda Langill, and it is for the warm, honeyed bosom. The message goes like this. P8.2. Bosomites are the best mites. Love you all. There is no better corner of the interweb. Flower, flower, flower.
Dive!
That was a period behind every flower. I just chose to give each word a slightly different read.
Right. Yeah. I'm familiar with that technique of rhetoric.
Yeah. That's Amanda Langill, who is a familiar to those who cruise the Greatest Discovery and Greatest Generation Facebook groups.
I'm glad to have gotten a pronunciation guide on the last name.
Yeah.
Also wondering still what the warm-honeyed bosom even is. Are they even going to know what this means if binturongs don't factor into it?
God, I don't know. I think you need a binturong to decipher the bosom. It's like turning two keys on a submarine.
Right.
You need the bosom key and the binturong key.
Yeah, otherwise the birds do not cross in the air and we do not get nuclear holocaust.
We do not, but what we do is get a Priority One message if you are interested in us reading your message on our show. You can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. Ben, they're the way this program gets made.
True indeed, Adam. And we're going to try and be on a more predictable schedule going forward. So, you know, there's no like guarantees about when your Jumbotron gets read, and we really apologize to Amanda for how long it's taken us to get to this one. But we're hoping to fix that with this show soon.
Agreed.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Well, I think that about wraps it up on our end, Ben.
Yeah, we'll leave the rest to Rob. I really like some of the suggestions we got from people about what we can do with the show going forward in this off season. One of my favorite suggestions was to read all of the Discovery comic books, which are apparently canon.
And, oh, I'd be into that. Yeah.
I mean, I'm bad at reading comic books, but I would try it for this show.
Yeah, I would too. What do you say we get the first canonical Disco book read before the next episode, and then we'll chat about it then?
That sounds awesome. I am up for that.
All right, deal. Take it away, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast, hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison, and it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org to support the ongoing production of this show, or just leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to continue the conversation online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. You can also join in the discussion over at the Greatest Gen subreddit or the Greatest Discovery group on Facebook. We'll see you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.